Media recognition from Bloomberg, Reuters, Recycling Trade Publications. Patented process for 100% recovery of critical metals, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, aluminum. American Manganese is focused on recycling lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles. American Manganese trades on the TSX Venture, AMY, the U.S., AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit AmericanManganeseInc.com or phone me, Larry Ray, at 778-574-4444.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Victor Adair, recently retired from nearly 50 years of being in the brokerage business in British Columbia. His website, victoradair.ca. He's still very active in the markets and keeps a close eye on them. Welcome back to the show, Victor.
Well, thank you, Jim. You know, it's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Ah, well, where do we start? Inflation at a 40-year high. Real estate markets have been soaring and starting to correct. Stock markets are plunging. The U.S. dollar at a 20-year high. The Canadian dollar diving like a submarine with screen doors. Where do we want to start this whole schmozzle?
You know, I think a good place to start is with interest rates, and let's just, you know, set a long-term time frame here. You know, for the last 42 years or so, interest rates have been declining since Volcker took interest rates up to about 20% on short-term rates to kill the inflation that was created certainly in the latter half of the 1970s. So that 40-year or so decline in interest rates was a great background for the rally we had in stock market and real estate market during that period of time. Also, the demographics of the baby boomers, you know, sort of coming from age, becoming adults, I should say, and doing all the things that adults do through that period of time. So we've had, I think, this declining trend in interest rates that's been in existence for most of the adult lifetime of most of the people that will probably be listening to the show. And I think that changed in the summer of 2020, August precisely. Interest rates hit what seemed to be like a 3,000-year low. You know, we had the COVID panic in March of 2020. Central banks all around the world freaked out. You know, printed money like there was no tomorrow. Lowered interest rates to practically zero, or in many big places below zero. And in addition to that, you know, governments got into the act like never before in peacetime. Deficits didn't matter anymore, and money was printed like there was no tomorrow. So from there, then we go forward, say the last 2 years or so. When you look at a 20 or 40-year chart of the stock market, it's like we've just gone parabolic the last 2 years or so. And of course, you know, we've seen all kinds of anecdotal stories and reports of real estate doing much the same thing, where prices have been trending higher in the real estate market for most of our lives, but have just gone bananas, you know, the last couple of years. So, but that's kind of, I think, the background of where we are. Certainly the lockdowns we had around the world due to COVID, you know, exposed the weakness of what we would used to call just-in-time supply chains and inventory management. And we started to see breakdowns there that caused some rising of prices, you know, supply chain crises. I think the inflation that we have been experiencing lately has been mostly a result of too much money printing, to use that old-fashioned term, both from the central banks and from the governments, as I was just saying, you know, seem to now totally disregard the any dangers that might come from deficit financing. So, too much money printing compounded these supply chain issues. The central banks, whether or not they truly believed it, took the transitory view, you know, for most of last year, like, don't worry, folks, this is just a short-term thing and it'll get sort itself out, and it didn't. And then things, let's say asset prices in particular, really started to move higher. In the stock market, we had these expressions like fear of missing out and there is no alternative. And I think the stock market, in a way, really kind of peaked out in early last year. Certainly that was when things of a more speculative nature, you take a look at one of the poster childs for that was ARK, that, you know, invested in all kinds of companies that someday would be something fantastic. But in the meantime, we're burning money like there's no tomorrow. You know, ARK shares, that's an ETF, are down about 80% from January of last year. January, February last year is when the Chinese tech market peaked out. And that was when we had all the meme stocks and all that sort of thing. And then we can, but the broad market, the indices, the way you're talking about the NASDAQ index, Dow Jones, you know, Toronto, the S&P, whatever, the indices continue to go higher, but they masked what was happening on the inside of the stock market as capital was shifting from sector to sector. So here we are now. Into sort of, you know, got the bit in our teeth, as it were. The Fed seems to be trying to cool demand. You know, they can't do anything about the supply chain issues, but if they can cool demand, which would mean, likely, nobody likes to spit this out, but it would mean rising unemployment and a slowing economy, perhaps even a recession, that'll cool demand, and that might take the heat off of inflation. So we're having markets try to react to that in various ways, and I'll tell you, from where I sit here in front of my screens, I mean, the action is probably as wild as I've seen it in some time. Certainly it reminds me of, say, the fall of 2008 when we were repricing a lot of things, or even just more recently when the market was adjusting to the fact that the world was getting clobbered by COVID back in March of 2020.
The S&P 500 index is down about 18% from all-time highs at the beginning of the year. The Dow down 15%. The NASDAQ nearly 30%. Where do you think we go from here?
This is clearly, my answer is it really depends on your time frame. As I mentioned just a few minutes ago, you look at a long-term chart, a 20, 40-year chart of the stock market. We've gone parabolic here the last couple of years, and we're correcting. You know, in gross terms, forgive me for not having this precise, but we've corrected about, this is the broad indices, about one-third of the gains that we've made from the COVID lows. That's in the major indices. You know, the NASDAQ and the Russell made their highs late last year, and then the Dow and the S&P made their highs right at the very beginning of this year. The Toronto market, which this year has been or was one of the strongest stock indices in the world, and I think, you know, the people around the world that put money into the Toronto market just saw it as a play on commodities, and commodities were bullish. But the Toronto market just peaked out last month, you know, and is now down 10-12%, something like that. This thing that I mentioned earlier about the indices, the relative strength in the indices kind of masking what was going on inside the stock market, I think it was very important as capital sort of below the surface was starting to shift from more speculative issues to more, let's say they were shifting from growth to value. Now, value had been left for dead, you know, in the past several years while everybody chased growth and that sort of thing, so we're getting a reversal in that ratio. Now, just recently here, the past few days, and especially very recently here, the crypto market has been getting killed. To me, and I have never traded crypto, and I've almost purposely not tried to follow the market because I've got enough to follow with the things that I look at. But it seemed to me as a confessed outsider, you know, looking at it from a distance, that the market had a lot of speculative fraud in it and opportunities for fraud and so on and so on. It may become something someday, but in this current environment, people are throwing over the side things that may become something someday and looking for safety. There's some real fear in the market. You know, I think we're down 6 weeks in a row on the S&P. We are now lower than where we were a year ago. And, you know, I don't think we've seen any real selling yet. One of the things I focused on in my blog over the last year and more is what we call passive investing. And that the capital that's been flowing into passive investments. And, I mean, explain what that is very, very simply. The theory would be that, you know, you can't time the market, you can't pick individual stocks, you can't pick individual sectors, but the overall market over time just continues to go up. So you want to buy the whole market, you know, on a regular basis, hang in there, don't freak out if there's a correction, and, you know, you'll retire rich. So the flow of money into passive investing in the last decade has accelerated to the degree that there's much more money going into that than what we would call active management, where guys do try to pick stocks, pick sectors, and time when they want to get in and out. Those folks, I think, have had, and that's generally retail, but there's a lot of institutional money in that kind of a framework as well. I think the people that have got money or have been motivated with this passive thing probably haven't sold anything yet. I've been writing that if we had a serious break in the market, and this might qualify as a serious break, although you never say never that it won't get worse, but if it just stays down for several months, then I think some of that passive money might start to, you know, look for relief and say, people be phoning their broker and say, hey, get me out. I mean, I'm sick and tired of this. I don't like what I'm seeing when I get my monthly statements. So we're nowhere near seeing that kind of money come out of the market yet. Yes, B, where we go from here, the market's extremely oversold short term, and, you know, we might get a bounce. We had in the middle of April, from mid-April, no, to the, was it mid-April or mid-March? Pardon me for being mixed up. I guess it was mid-April. We had what I called at the time a bear market rally. And in bear markets, historically, you can have these stunning, quick, vicious rallies, and we call them bear market rallies. And then, you know, they run out of steam and the market rolls over again and makes new lows. So it depends on your time frame. I think we made, and I've been writing in my blog for some time, and, you know, different public speaking that I've done over the past several months, certainly last year, saying to people, you know, I think there's a lot of froth here. You should be taking a look at what's in your portfolio and maybe taking some profits and just managing your risks. I think there's a sense in the market, and this may be overplayed, but like we've entered a new era in terms of the Fed after all these years, a couple of decades anyway, of really easy money policy. They may have got substantially tougher. You know, we had a market that ran to the stars, so it's having a correction, could go further. I'm a trader, you know, and I try to make my money without having huge opinions about things, because huge opinions will lead you to hang on to things while you're getting killed, and I just don't do that. So, Jimmy, we've had a hard down here. I could see it going either way for my short-term trading. I could be a buyer of the market or a seller of the market, but I look to call it good entry points and risk management before I'll do either one of those things.
You've been bullish on the U.S. dollar during every interview we've done since January of last year. It's soared the past few weeks. Do you think it keeps going higher?
The U.S. dollar, yes. We talked about that. The turning point for me, and I keep referring to this, but it was an inflection point when the mob invaded the Capitol building in Washington, D.C. on January 6th of last year. I was shocked when I saw that, when I saw the, you know, mainstream media video coverage of it, and I thought, my God, you know, the whole world is seeing this. And that day marked, I think it was about a 7-year low in the U.S. dollar index against a basket of other currencies. And the old Rothschild thing of you want to buy when there's blood in the streets and all that, that was part of my rationale. And, yeah, I've been generally bullish. I mean, believe me, I didn't buy the U.S. dollar and you know, put it on with huge leverage, and I hold it until today. That's nobody does that. But for the most part, if I've been trading the currencies, I've been trading with the thought in mind that the U.S. dollar is going higher. Lately, and really when I say lately, since the Russian invasion of Ukraine just set off all kind of alarm bells, the U.S. dollar has just been on steroids here to the upside. Now, the other side, when I say the U.S. dollar, it's got to be against something else. A couple of the currencies that had just been clobbered have been the Japanese yen and the European, we'll call it the euro, but all the currencies in Europe. But realistically, all the currencies all over the world have been weakening against the U.S. dollar, especially here the past few weeks. So why? My old mantra that I've had for years is capital comes to America for safety and opportunity. Okay, so the opportunity is, it seems like right now the central bank in the United States is going to be way more aggressive than central banks anywhere else. So there's going to be an interest rate spread that'll benefit you to be in America. Other kinds of opportunity, I mean, during the latter half of the 1990s, for instance, when the dot-com boom was developing in the United States, and you could buy tech stocks in the United States like you couldn't buy anywhere else in the world, and capital flowed to America to participate the opportunities that were happening in the tech sector in particular in the United States, and that was another form of opportunity. The capital came in that ran the U.S. dollar up, ran those stocks up, and because that was happening, more capital came in, you know, rinse and repeat, and the U.S. dollar had a hell of a run into 2001, 2002. The other side of where we're at here now is safety. I mean, when I see the euro just getting clobbered, and the Swiss franc as well, which is really amazing, getting clobbered here relative to the U.S. dollar, I mean, that's capital, in a way, voting with its feet. Like, Europe is knee-deep in problems, whether it's energy issues, whether it's, you know, the bear is at the back door, and who knows, you know, where Russia's going to go from here, that sort of thing. And instead of sticking around and, you know, taking your chances, so to speak, capital has come to America. So, right lately here, I think the U.S. dollar has been pushed higher because of fear. You know, capital leaves other places. And certainly interest rates have been, or the market is thinking that interest rates will remain higher and maybe even get even higher than other places, and that's pulled money into America. Now, another old adage that I have about the currency markets is that trends in the currency markets go way further than you think makes any sense, and then they turn on a dime and go the other way. So right now, the U.S. dollar index looks incredibly overvalued in terms of the rate of change it's had here to the upside, and could be due or overdue for a nasty correction. But, you know, as I'm saying, these markets just go way further than seems to make any sense. The climb will actually feed on itself as people that maybe are still holding the euro start looking at each other and say, are we goofs? Are we idiots here? Well, look, the euro is going down, down, down. Let's get out of it. So at some point, we will have a V-shaped turn, and the U.S. dollar will go the other way. But, you know, it's not today.
The Canadian dollar's been weaker against the U.S. dollar the past few weeks, but it seems to be doing better than most other currencies. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, the Canadian dollar, okay, let's just take that expression I talked about, how capital comes to America for safety and opportunity. Let's put a word in there and say North America. Capital comes to North America. I mean, the United States and Canada certainly are different, but, you know, if you're in Europe, you know, North America looks like it's all the same. And Canada is kind of a kicker that they've got to focus on commodities. So I think capital from the rest of the world that's maybe looking for safety and opportunity, some of that capital has come to Canada as well as the United States. The euro right now is trading at about a 9-year low relative to the Canadian dollar. The Japanese yen is trading around a 20-year low relative to the Canadian dollar. So yeah, Canada is weaker against the U.S., but it's doing better. I mean, last year, remember, we were talking about this so many times, the Canadian dollar was the strongest currency in the world. It was even gaining against the American dollar. So Canada has attracted its share of capital. It's seen as a play on commodities. Commodities have been popular and so on. So I think that kind of accounts for the strength in the Canada. We've talked over the last couple of years about the main issues, either on short-term or longer-term, that are important to the Canadian dollar value relative to the U.S. The number one thing is how the U.S. dollar is doing against the rest of the world. As we've just talked, the U.S. dollar is soaring, so that would account for some weakness in the Canadian dollar. Number two is how are commodity markets doing? Well, the commodity markets obviously have been almost red hot here since 2 years ago, the COVID panic. So that's been a plus for the Canadian dollar. On shorter term things, I mean, day to day, I can put a chart of the Canadian dollar on one of my screens and a chart of the S&P 500 on another screen, or overlay them. And I'm going to tell you that the Canadian dollar is going to tick up and down with the S&P 500, which is my go-to barometer for risk on and risk off. So if the market then is in a risk off mode, that's negative for the Canadian dollar. Now sometimes interest rate differentials are important. These days there aren't much in the way of interest rate differentials. You know, Canada is relative to the rest of the world is kind of staying with the United States, not only in current interest rate policy, but in terms of what's expected in the near future. And then from time to time, there's other short-term factors. But the relative strength of the U.S. dollar, commodities, and the risk-on, risk-off attitude are the important things. Canada's definitely softened up here 2-3 cents against the U.S. dollar the last couple of months, but is outperforming most other currencies in the world.
We'll have more with Victor Adair right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Victor Adair. Victor, you told us before that a strong U.S. dollar and higher interest rates are like kryptonite to gold and silver. Is that what has hurt the precious metals, or is there more to the story?
Lately, certainly the gold market is, well, let's say we're down about $250 or so from, the all-time high that we made immediately following the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Silver's down more dramatically than that. But yeah, you're right. Over time, the U.S. dollar relative to, or if the U.S. dollar is strong, gold is weak, and vice versa. Now that's historically, let's say over the past 20 years for sure, that generally happens. Maybe in the last 10 years, people started to notice there was a real correlation between real interest rates and gold. In other words, if real interest rates were negative, that was good for gold. If real interest rates were positive, that was not so good for gold. So we had a run from, say, 2018 to 2020, let's say, when we made the highs there post the COVID crisis in March. I think the highs were in July of 2020 in gold. During that period of time, that couple of years, there was a very strong correlation between as real interest rates got more and more negative, that was really good for gold. Lately, we've had real interest rates in the United States, at least, go positive. You know, and they've had actually a sharp increase here as interest rates have been rising. The real rate has been rising as well, and gold has not got clobbered as much as the correlation would indicate. I'm going to say I think there is a big geopolitical risk premium. Let's call it a war premium in the gold price right now. In other words, if Russia and Ukraine, if Russia hadn't invaded Ukraine and everything else was equal, sorry, that's so simple, but in that case, I think gold would be $200 lower than where it is right now. So, you know, you ask, is it the U.S. dollar in interest rates? Yeah, the U.S. dollar being as strong as it is a drag on gold. Interest rates, the real interest rates haven't been correlated with gold as nearly as much as they used to be here, and if they were, we'd be much lower. But I think there's a real kicker here with the fear that's in the market, the uncertainty, that geopolitical risk premium from the war and what may happen from here, and that's supported gold higher than it would be otherwise. And I'm guessing, you know, that premium's probably $200-$300.
The commodity indices made 20-year lows when COVID hit the markets 2 years ago. Then they started to rally, and that rally accelerated when Russia invaded Ukraine. Is it surprising that commodities have not weakened lately, with the stock market down and interest rates up?
Yes. Yeah, that's a tricky question. I think there has been some weakness in the commodity indices, but the commodity indices are not monolithic. Maybe that's the way to look at it. I mean, I see copper prices getting clobbered here the past couple of months. Now, they've had a heck of a run over the past couple of years, and more than a couple, kind of people looking forward at electrification and seeing big demand for copper that wasn't going to be met by supply because there just hadn't been enough CapEx put into, you know, discovering and mining and processing and whatnot, new supplies of copper. So copper's been down, but of course, and food prices, and let's say food prices, it's corn and wheat and soybeans, that sort of thing at that kind of a level, have soared because of the disruption and the potential for huge disruption of supply from Russia and the Ukraine. And then there's other supply issues, as there always is. I mean, we've got areas in the United States, Midwest and that sort of thing, where they've serious droughts, and maybe that will affect prices. But there's always things like that going on. The wild card, I guess, and the thing that has a heavy weighting in all of the commodity indices is energy. And energy, I mean, we spiked WTI up to 130 a barrel following the Russian invasion of Ukraine, and prices have been, since then, I mean, they fell back. I mean, we got maybe down to $95. Let's say we're trading between 100 and 110 lately, something like that, roughly. There has been a huge steepening of the backwardation in the market. In other words, right now, if June is trading at $110, then December of this year is trading at $100, which really points out that there's a real scarcity of, you know, hands-on spot supply. We've seen just absolutely stunning, massive spikes in natural gas prices in Europe and Asia. We've seen nat gas spike huge in North America as well. And I can't help myself, but I got to go to what I call the ass backwards energy policies that we've had in the Western world that have left us in a precarious position. Certainly, you know, it's obvious that Europe's reliance on energy supplies from Russia looks now, in hindsight, like a really dumb move, but it was made, and now what are we going to do? Germany deciding to shut down their nuclear generating facilities. Looks like maybe that wasn't such a good idea. The hostility that we've seen toward fossil fuels throughout the world, but particularly, you know, in the democratic nations of the West, whether it's Canada with our government, the United States, Europe, and so on, the hostility toward fossil fuels, while everybody had this notion that we needed to stop that and stop it virtually immediately, and we're going to save ourselves with windmills and solar panels, is you know, we're getting hurt by that right now. And we're going to go forward here into a precarious energy supply environment because of those policies. And there seems to be, in some respects, I think, from some of the maybe the more extreme folks, some joy to see that these prices are high. And that feeds through, you know, if fuel prices are high. And let me just back up for a sec on that. One of the things that really gets me about the energy policies is how in the ESG environment we've had here the past decade or so in particular, there has been virtually no new refining capacity built while there has been older refining capacity shut down. So we have diesel prices now and jet fuel prices that would be historically the kind of prices you'd expect if WTI was trading between $150 and $200. Well, it's not. You know, we're at $100. And the reason that we have those really high prices in diesel and jet fuel, and gasoline to a lesser degree, are because we don't have the refining capacity. Well, who was going to build a hugely expensive refinery if, you know, you were going to be told by the local bureaucrats 10 years in the future you had to shut everything down and so on. So they didn't get built, and nobody wanted a refinery in their own backyard and on and on and on. I just think we're going to have some pretty volatile action in the commodity markets. I mean, short term, we've had a pretty terrific run up in commodities. You know, we just talked about gold has come off, silver has come off, copper's come off. Maybe some of the other markets, the other commodities will be susceptible to that decline that you've talked about in the stock market. You know, that your neighbor sneezes and you catch a cold. But I think I'm more likely inclined to subscribe to the view that we are going to have a supply issue. In other words, we're going to have more demand for commodities going forward than we're going to have supply, and that's going to be a major boost to commodity prices, you know, big picture wise, over the next few years, unless, of course, we go into some dark recession-induced depression, and then, you know, we won't have the demand, then we won't have to worry about it.
In your weekly blog, victoradair.ca, you have a section called Thoughts on Trading, where you write about how you trade. One of your core beliefs is that risk management is critical to you. Well, just how critical?
I'll tell you how critical, Jim. You know, a lot of people go to conferences and that sort of thing, and they listen to the speakers, and maybe they want confirmation, you know, from the speaker that what they have already done was the right thing to do. I mean, I remember, God bless him, years ago hearing Doug Casey shout out at a gold conference that gold was going to the moon. Well, of course, the whole room roared with approval. That was exactly what they wanted to hear. And, you know, here was the great guru telling them that, you know, the gold that they bought was a good idea. And by the way, I've had several visits with Doug Casey, and I really like him, and I think he's a very original thinker. I'm not making fun of Doug in any way. But people want to either get a confirmation that what they've already done is the right thing, or they're looking for somebody who can tell them what's going to happen. And one of my key beliefs that I had a little sticker glued to one of my screens for years was a quote from Trading in the Zone by Mark Douglas, and it was, anything can happen. And I really, really believe that. So from that, I'm going to tell you that I make money trading commodities. I do not make money because I've got a terrific crystal ball. I make money because I'm really, really disciplined about managing risk. What does that mean? What does it mean to manage risk? I think it means kind of keeping my opinions in check, let's say, about what I think should happening and trying to focus on what I think will happen, for a starter. It really means managing my size. I will always trade smaller than I could. And one of the reasons for that is I don't want any trade that I put on to be any more special or mean anything more than any other trade, which also means then that if I put a trade on and it's not working, I just go, oh, this one's not working. Okay, get rid of it. Cut it out. And it's not a big deal. If you're married to something and it starts to go against you, and I've been there, you know, and I'm hoping that everybody that's listening has also been there. You know, sometimes you just stay with a losing trade far too long, and maybe that's how you learn to not do it again. So, and then another one of my favorites is the time frames. You know, I just talked about time frames with, you know, it depends on your time frame, if the commodity market's going to do this or that. You know, if you're trading with a 15-minute time frame, what you think the commodity market's going to do over the next 5 years is absolutely meaningless information, that sort of thing. And I have an analogy. You know, a lot of people will have a favorite sports team. You know, let's say you like the Calgary Flames. Okay, that's your favorite team. And so, you know, you got a chance to bet on them whether they're going to win the Stanley Cup. So you bet on the Calgary Flames. Well, really, if you're betting to win money, you want to bet on the team that's most likely to win. And it may or may not be, you know, your favorite. But what your favorite is should have nothing to do with that. So that's what I mean when I say you want to bet on what you think will happen, you know, not what you hope is going to happen or what you think should happen.
Victor, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Jim, it is always a pleasure to chat with you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
My guest has been Victor Adair. Check out his website and blog at victoradair.ca. If you have any questions for Victor or any of our other guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com, and we'll ask that question for you. Find us on Twitter at House Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.